Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present, and emerging, and their multiple birth parents with children with disabilities.
And this week we're speaking to P sisters Victoria and Liz.
The thing about Victoria and Liz is that we've already spoken to them.
Yes, so we did record with these beautiful sisters maybe a month or so ago, and we had a really big, tricky sound difficulty.
Technical.
So we have invited them back.
Yes.
And we're going to do a better job.
We are going to do a better job.
Just like when we stopped recording in the early days and didn't press start. So let's do it.
Let's do it. This podcast contains truth, laughter, and the occasional F word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right. This is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hello, Mandy.
Hello, Kate.
Coming to you from the lands of the freezing people.
Yes. My yes. goodness. Scarves. Our guests do not have scarves on.
No, they do not.
We are cold.
I've got a blankie on my lap.
Oh, the heater. Oh, my gosh.
I know we've told you how much we give up for you peas, but we can't have a heater on while we're recording.
No, we can't have the noise.
No.
Yes.
So it's got to be silent.
Anyway, so this is for you, Annalise. More complaining. She's like, oh, every week.
Well,
oh,
the weather. It's not a complaint. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
It was 3 degrees when I was taking the boys to the bus this morning, and that's chilly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is chilly. So anyway, it does mean that when you turn the gas log fire on, it's really nice and cozy.
Yes.
I love a cozy.
Oh, I love cozy
that
too.
Is the
yeah, that's
flip
what Melbourne's
side.
Good at.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
yes.
We will tell you the truth is that we've already talked to these beautiful
guests. We have.
Guests.
You may have heard that in the introduction.
Oh, yeah, we said that in the intro. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
But yeah, we've already spoken to them and it didn't record properly. So we're back at it.
So we're excited to spend time with you again. And this time we're going to do a much better job, hey?
Yes, yes. So yeah. We've got sisters.
Yes.
You both, were your parents fans of the royal family?
A little bit.
With your name.
We've got Victoria and Elizabeth.
Yes.
So. Oh, yeah. Mum loved history.
Right.
Ah,
yes.
Of course. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Got it.
So, yes.
So, okay. Who, maybe you could say I am and I am with your name. So, introduce yourselves.
Hi, Mandy and Kate and everyone listening. I'm Victoria and I live in southeast Queensland and I'm really excited to be here today talking about my experiences along with my sister.
Yes.
And that leads to me. I'm Liz and I live in southeast Queensland too, so it's nice and warm.
Yeah.
In the sun. It's a bit cold in the shade though.
Mm.
And I'm excited to talk about my son.
Yay.
We love having sisters.
I know. It's really special actually.
It is really special.
So thank you. Let's start with our questions.
All right. I will start with Victoria first. Victoria, do you have a favourite song or a band or, you know, a piece of music that you love?
I love music and I'll get up and dance and sing even though I can't really carry a tune.
Oh, same.
I love the emotions and the memories. Mm. We grew up with our parents playing LPs every weekend. Yes. And we still have LP nights.
Oh.
We listened to such a range of music, so I found it really hard to pick just one. I really, really struggle. Yes. I probably had about 10 on my list.
Yeah.
I've got one of the ones I do look forward to listening to on our LP nights is The Power of Love by Jennifer Rush.
Ah. Yeah, my mind automatically goes to the Jeff Bullock version.
The church version.
The Christian version. But I do know it's flicked back into your version.
The Power of Love. Got it.
Yeah. And I do like Stand By Me by Benny King.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's actually a lovely song. Yes.
That's a PR thing. I guess, like, some of the recent ones, though, that I would just jump up and dance to is, you know, Lady Gaga, Poker Face.
Awesome.
I'll
let Liz tell you her.
Yes, go Liz.
So my all-time favourite is What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong.
Yes.
But I don't mind the Eva Cassidy version either. That's pretty cool.
Eva Cassidy.
Yes,
that's a beautiful version.
It
good.
Is.
That can. Which one do you want on the Spotify playlist?
Probably Eva Cassidy's stunning use of the playlist.
Yeah.
If I want something to lift me up, I'll go with Adele.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go like Rolling in the Deep or Fire in the Rain.
Awesome.
But then I have the morbid, this is the one I want played at my funeral.
Yeah.
Seasons in the Sun by Terry Jacks.
Whenever I bring that up with my friends about songs for my funeral, they get mad with me.
I know. I did it the other day to my partner and she's like, well, that's a bit. I'm like, no.
I want it to be organised. Yeah,
that's what I want.
Yeah. I'm with you, Liz, and you need to tell people so that your wishes are granted.
Yeah, my mum will be in there going, she wanted the Lord's Prayer. I'm like, no, that's not what she wanted.
Oh, we love an organised pee.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, what about, did you win any awards at school? Start with you, Victoria.
I don't remember winning awards, and we emigrated from England when I went into high school. So I think it was a little bit tricky when we first came over here, you know, going into high school. But through primary school in England, I remember always having assemblies and they would give out star cards. So these are the little star cards.
I can't believe she's got the star cards.
And each week I'd work so hard to try and get one of these little star cards. And, you know, it could be things for like spellings, maths, craft work. This one's craft work.
So it's sort of the size of a business card, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite little.
Yeah, yeah.
And the headmistress, she would sign at the bottom.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Hold it there. Up. I'm going to take a photo. I should have got that organised before. Okay, there we go. There's the star card. Thank you.
She's
got a whole box of those.
Oh, yeah, my word.
So when you're having a bad day.
Oh, my gosh, she's got a whole box.
Do you flick back through and go, look how bloody good I was at craft?
You must have.
My children may not listen to me, but I look at these star cards.
Yes. They must have been really important to you.
I think it was. My mum and dad kept them and passed them on to me. And I just can't get rid of them.
In a decor container.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. What about you, Liz?
I'm an overachiever. So
you're also accepted. We'll accept you.
I'm glad I'm here. I was one of the captains in primary school. I was a prefect in high school. Mm. I was captain of hockey. Wow. I won an achievement award every year for academic achievement.
Yeah.
I got the headmaster's prize for writing.
Wow.
You really are an overachiever.
Player's player at hockey. So, yeah, I'm an overachiever. I had a scholarship in high school and at uni. So,
wow.
Yeah, just...
We need these people.
Yeah, we do.
Can't all be like you and me, Mandy.
Oh, goodness. And so, okay, Kate,
And our favourite question, Victoria, why are you a P?
I'm a pea because I'm a mum to two pea shoots. My eldest son, Owen, is 18 and has a rare genetic condition called ectodermal dysplasia. And my youngest, Jack, is 16 and I guess he's undiagnosed, non-neurotypical.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. He's on the neurodivergent path.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Definitely
what,
is.
What about you, Liz? Why are you in the pea?
I am a mum to a five-year-old little boy who has ASD, and he was a 28-week prem baby.
Mm-hmm. So, that's a micro baby. Yeah.
How about we start?
And he was quite big for that.
What was his weight?
1.3 kilos.
Oh, wow, that's big. Yeah.
I dodged a bullet, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, because you would have had a 15-pounder.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was going to be.
Overachieving yet again.
Yeah. I had the biggest 28-weeker ever.
Pretty much. That's my claim.
Wow. You both, I think it was, who emailed me from the beginning? I think it was you, Liz.
Liz.
Yeah, Liz.
Yeah, I think
to say,
I
you need
emailed
to,
initially.
Yeah, you said you need to interview my sister. And then she said, I think you need to interview her as well. Sister. Yeah. So it's really beautiful. Thank you for reaching out to us and also for your P support. You've got the P T-shirt on. I can see Liz.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's very gorgeous.
I've got my jumper on. It's a little bit chilly.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, you've got it on too, because I was going to say last time you both had it on.
Yeah.
So, right, let's just start a little bit with maybe Victoria, since you've got the older kids. Mm. Can you tell us a little bit about your son and when he was born and that the diagnosis time? Mm.
Sure. So I'll start with pregnancy. So my pregnancy with Owen appeared to be normal, but two things happened. One, I didn't gain any weight during the pregnancy at all. Mm. So when I left school, I weighed around 56 kilos, and that's still my weight today.
All right. That is a good flex, I'm just going to say. Because I was 58 kilos and I am not 58 kilos now.
I think I've got a really high metabolism. Plus, I'm not sure if that's an ED thing because I'm the carrier. So, and my belly was always measured every time I went for an appointment to check that the baby was growing. I was constantly asked if I was eating. And after the birth, I weighed myself and I'd actually lost 2 kilos. So wow. I was all baby.
Yeah.
So the second thing was that I did the glucose test around 28 weeks and it indicated that I had gestational diabetes, which was a bit of a shock because I think I assumed that was, you know, more if you were putting on a lot of weight or
well, and the babies
sort of
tend
thing.
To get really big, don't they, with gestational diabetes. So, yeah.
So I had to do the whole 2 weeks of get your levels right or you're on injections, got my levels right, didn't have to have injections. So that was the sort of the pregnancy. When Owen was born, he was 3.5 weeks early. Mm. I had a very quick 4-hour quick vaginal birth. He weighed 6 pounds 2 ounces.
Okay, so he wasn't he was 3 weeks early. So yeah.
And he was, but we noticed that there was little to no amniotic fluid, which later through our support group and camps, I've spoken to other mothers and we've shared the same experiences with when you've had a child with ED and without ED, you notice differences.
Yes.
So we're thinking that might be an ED related thing, but there's no research on that. Mm. Owen was put under lights because he thought he was a little bit jaundiced, but then he was sent to the special care as they thought that he had a temperature. But looking back now, it's probably just overheating because part of the condition is that they can't sweat. Mm. So he stayed in the special care nursery for 3 days and then he was allowed to go home. But we had a follow-up appointment with the paediatrician, we were really fortunate to have that appointment because we were in the system. Mm. So that was really good. We have a beautiful paediatrician, Dr. Jan Cullen, who saw Owen all the way up until I think he was 17 because now you can't go and see her. She saw something straight away, but she didn't know what it was. And so she was really gentle and she asked me questions like, Do you have small features in your family? Could you bring family photos to your next visit?
Right.
So she was trying to find what it was, but she just didn't know.
Mm-mm.
And so it wasn't until Owen was about 18 months, he had no teeth. I took him to our local dentist, who referred us to a specialist dentist, and that's when ectodermal dysplasia was mentioned. Mm. I remember the dentist mentioned it. Yeah. So, and a lot of the people with ED are diagnosed by dentists, right, because there's a lot more in their textbooks and their study on this than there are for doctors, because it is classified as a rare condition. When Owen was diagnosed, we were told there was something like 7,000 rare conditions in the world. So how does a doctor know all of those?
True. Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, that was a bit of an eye opener. I just remember the dentist asking me to hold Owen in my lap, and he just felt inside his mouth, and he said very calmly and gently, "I don't think Owen will get any teeth ever. And I think he has this condition, which I can't recall the name, just give me a minute." And he brought out this massive book and he started flipping through pages and came back and he said he has ectodermal dysplasia. I couldn't even say the name. No. I was trying to hold back tears. I was asking him to write it down, and at the same time he's writing it on a referral to the Royal Children's. So, I guess ectodermal dysplasia, I'll just give you a bit of a brief on it. It's a rare genetic condition. It impacts the ectoderm layer of an embryo's development. So when two or more of the ectoderm structures are affected, a person is deemed to have ectodermal dysplasia. So there's over 100 different types of ED. And Owen has HED, so he has hypohidrotic ectodermal dysplasia, so meaning that he can't sweat. And
So living in Queensland.
It's fun. It's definitely fun.
It's interesting though, because we've had families say that they've moved to Queensland from southern states and the skin of their kids have improved more, because obviously they don't sweat, they don't have the oils, so they can get really bad dermatitis. That eczema and can be different in dry heat compared to the humid heat. I like the air conditioned environment a lot as well. And it affects everyone differently.
Yeah, of course. Mm. So when you first got that diagnosis, I think hearing that your little precious 18-month-old was never going to get teeth would have really hit you for six, did it?
It was so, I remember I'd taken my mum because my husband, he was working, and I just remember trying to hold it together in the in front of the dentist and then walking out to the car and just bursting into tears. It kind of felt to me like someone was telling me my child wasn't perfect, even though, you know, no one's perfect, but it was just sort of a kick in the guts in a way.
It's one of those things. Everyone's kids get teeth.
And I was only there to find out when he had when he was going to get teeth, and all of a sudden he's not getting teeth ever. Like, what? And now he's got a condition. What's going on?
Massive day.
So that was hard. And my mum was really good. She was sitting in the car and she said, "Okay, Victoria, he's not dying. Let's just, focus. It's okay." I only spent maybe a weekend sort of wallowing in, crying.
A bit of self-pity and
And then we just got on with things. But, it was definitely a shock.
Big shock. And so... Then you ended up at the Royal Children's?
We also had the paediatrician at our local hospital and she then gave us referrals for everything. So we did speech, dietitian, audiology, occupational therapy. We also started the process of seeing the oral health at the Royal Children's. So at about 3.5, Owen received his first upper denture. So and then from there, there's been, surgeries and other things that have happened. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it's been a journey.
I can imagine. When he is fully grown, can he have implants?
Yes. So we're very fortunate that his condition, so it was going back to Aussie D is our support group.
Yeah.
And so that was founded in 2004 by Natalie and Andrew Williams, and they are from Victoria, and they were able to get ectodermal dysplasia identified as a disability.
Right.
And also we were able to incorporate it as part of the cleft palate program through Medicare. Yeah, so our kids don't have cleft naturally.
No. Right.
They are part of that program because it offers similar services.
Right.
The only problem is the cleft palate program finishes at the age of 28, I think it is. And so whereas our children, it's a lifelong.
Yeah.
Whereas cleft, generally, you've had all your surgeries and all your by that time. So that's the only downfall.
It's also difficult because you have to have a diagnosis before a certain age or else you don't qualify for the cleft scheme.
Right.
And a lot of these people or kids or teenagers or adults who don't actually know that that's what they have until later. It does make it a little bit difficult for the older people.
Of course. Well, they're going to have to change that. I don't know how.
Oh, it's like hearing aids. You know, the government will pay for hearing aids until, 16 or 18.
And then, you're on your own.
Too bad, until you're 65. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's sort of in our house and it's real. Okay. I don't mean to rush you through this, but I want to get to everybody, right? So what about we head over to you, Liz? And maybe you can tell us a little bit about your pregnancy with your precious little poppet.
Yeah.
So I'm in a gay relationship. So my wife and I had a baby. Obviously he was through IVF.
Yeah.
So he was very well monitored from a very early age.
Yeah.
And we didn't really have any problems through the pregnancy. I had a little bit of spotting every now and then, which my OB thought was fine. No issues, never found anything wrong, so that was fine. I was diagnosed with gestational diabetes as well, but also I was all baby. There was nothing else happening. There was just a baby in front of me, but I was enormous. My sister will attest to that. At 26 weeks, I looked like I was ready to pop, but it was all baby in the front. So once I got the gestational diabetes results, I went to starting the testing. And within a couple of days of that, I started bleeding heavily. And that turned out to be a placental abruptions. I was in hospital for 9 days. In that 9 days, I went into labor 3 times.
Did you get pumped full of steroids?
I did on the first one. I got pumped full of steroids. So I got the steroids on the Monday, Tuesday. Then on the Wednesday, I went into labor the second time and I got pumped full of the magnesium chloride, spent the day in the birthing suite, hoping he didn't come, and got the phone call from the hospital saying, "We're ready for your tour." Oh, no, I'm already in.
Ouch.
And there's the things you forget.
Me and the midwife just having a bit of a giggle over that phone call, so that was funny.
That was 2 weeks ago, me.
And then I went back on the ward. Obviously he didn't come that day, but we did find out during that labor that his heart was stopping when I had a contraction. So he was in danger if we tried again. So we were basically told next time he's coming out the sunroof, that's it. We're not leaving him in there. So about a week went by and we thought we were pretty good. We thought everything was starting to settle down, and then bam, labor and emergency C-section. I think he was born within an hour of
your wife able to be there?
Starting. Yeah, luckily she'd stayed the night that night.
Wow.
So 3 o'clock in the morning he was born, and she was standing right there with him. So she followed him into the NICU, and I went to recovery. I think I was listening to an episode the other day where someone was saying recovery was really hard, and I think I'm really lucky that Debbie was there because she was going backwards and forwards between me and him and bringing me videos of him to show me, like, him being weighed and and, like, put into the incubator and all that kind of stuff. So it was really good that I had that person being able to do that because, yeah, I couldn't move. I was just lying there for 12 hours.
And so
but, my nurse –
were you so shocked to have a 28-weeker?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely a big shock. No one in the family had had early births. Like, Vic had gone to full term with hers. As far as we knew with mum, there was no issues with her birth. So really not something we expected at all. So, yeah.
And at that point, like, Victoria, were you like, oh, this is bringing up some of my memories of having a tricky time when your baby was born, your son, or were you just kicked into sister gear and like, right, I'm helping?
Yeah, I think it was more sister gear, to be honest. I see, I don't think I associated my pregnancy as being a traumatic one. So, you know, in my birth, I don't think I've ever really thought of it that way. And so it was more just, oh, what can I do to help my sister and her partner? And I think also with the whole, you know, trauma side of it for my sister and her partner, I don't think I even really had a clear understanding of that for until like maybe last year when or the year before when I started listening to your podcast and I heard your NICU journeys. It really hit home, and that's when I started having those conversations with my sister, because I could, that made me identify with what she'd gone through.
Yeah, there's nothing quite like walking out the door and leaving your baby in the hospital.
Yeah.
I'm not going to cry.
Oh, no, you can cry. We're crying.
How old were your kids, Victoria, when Liz had her baby?
Owen would have been about 13.
Yeah, let's go about 13 and 11. So,
yeah, so you were busy.
And I think we have a lot of family around of us that support us, you know, so like my mum and dad. And also Deb's family as well is quite large, so that she had her mum and dad. And, you know, and there's lots of, you know, siblings and, you know, cousins and things. So, and even my aunt, you know, so there was a lot of people helping, you know, visiting. None of us saw Elizabeth's little boy, you know, and Deb's little boy.
We had a long closed. We told the NICU that it was just us until he went home, because it was just going to be too hard to manage otherwise.
Especially when you got a big tribe around you.
We got a big tribe, and also, like, you know, if one of them came, then one of us didn't.
Two people.
Two person only. So we just said no.
You have to see him.
We'll look after him until he comes out of the hospital, and then you guys can see him then.
Which is when
because at the moment he just needs to be protected.
How did people cope with that?
It was hard at first. There was a lot of pushback because people just wanted to see him. They didn't understand the danger that he was in realistically. They just see it as, oh, it's a baby. The baby will be fine because they're in hospital, they're in the right place. But they don't understand the compromised immunity at that stage. Like, I didn't go to hospital on two of the days because I had a sniffle and I didn't want to give it to him. And terrified of taking anything in.
Yeah, I think COVID's made us realize a little bit what it's like to live like that.
Yeah, I think
like
people
that.
Are a lot more understanding now. Like if you say to people, like, I've got a newborn, I don't want you to come around, they're like, yeah, no, that's fine.
I think they totally would now. Yeah. But 5 years ago,
we didn't know.
Yeah, 2018 when he was born, people were like, it's just a sniffle. Like, it's not a big deal. But I was ringing the hospital going, I'm not coming in today. I've got a little bit of sniffle.
Which the hospital gets.
So, it was – yeah, the hospital got it. They were fine. But he was in NICU for 77 days. And I
every day.
I went back to work after 8 weeks. I didn't have a lot of maternity leave. We didn't have a lot of money to be able to do that. So I was starting at 4 o'clock in the morning and getting myself to work, like pumping constantly all day.
Expressing.
going to work for 8 to 10 hours, depending on the day, working with chemicals. So then having to go home, have a shower, get dressed again and go to the hospital. Try and time that with the nurses so that I would get to feed him in that. And then like either through trying to breastfeed or through a syringe if we needed to, depending on the day.
Yeah.
And then trying to, if I missed the first one, I had to stay 4 hours to see the next one. So I would get home sometimes midnight and then get up at 4 o'clock the next morning and start again.
Okay, but you don't even care because you're just like.
No.
It's not the wrong word. You're just doing it.
Yeah.
Just doing it. Yeah. Just got to get through it to get to the next day and hopefully eventually he'll come home. And
what was it like when you brought him home? Can you remember that day?
Oh, it was a bit of a mess actually that day.
Yeah.
So the Mater Mothers was under renovations while he was in NICU. So they kept moving pods while they were building one.
Oh, my gosh.
They were still trying to house the 77 beds they have in one less pod.
Oh, dear.
So it was a really disjointed sort of experience. Like we were still in NICU officially, but we were in the special care unit at one point.
Yeah.
And then we were still in special care, but we were in the adults hospital across the road.
Oh, boy.
So it was a little bit weird. We were below the psych ward. On the day that they said we were going to room in and then take him home, they were telling me I was going to room in the room where they were, which was near the psych ward in the adults hospital.
I
just lost it.
Yeah.
I'd held it together for 77 days.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just want one thing to go right. And the nurse realized and was like, okay, and managed to get me a room back in the original Mater Mothers level 10 rooming in. Because I couldn't do it that day. That was just, that was my tipping point.
And you want to be surrounded by midwives. You want the people who know. Yeah,
I want to be surrounded by a calm environment. It didn't seem calm in the adults hospital, whereas it was back in the mothers. So we managed to get that room. And the day we roomed in, we invited the grandparents to come and meet him.
Like he was born.
And that was the day they realised how small he was.
Yeah. Because when he left hospital.
We were like, he's huge. Look how big he is. And they go, I think he was just under 7 pounds when we left hospital.
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh, look how tiny he is. And we're like, he's enormous.
He's double his size.
He's almost triple the size he was. Look at him. So, we were all pumped about that. So they got to meet him that day. So it was very exciting for everyone.
Did you have any time off when he came home?
Yeah, I had a week off because it was Easter when he came home.
Good time.
So I had a 4 day week and then I had a couple days off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a couple days off the week after. So it was good. It it gave me a couple days to sort of just get to know him at home. And he did the preemie grunt for a year. I swear.
Yeah.
How do you get through that preemie grunt in the first year? You can't sleep through it.
So. One of my girls definitely had that. I remember being at Mother's Group and she just did that grunting all the time. And I just was like, tone it down.
I'd never heard of it before.
You wouldn't.
Like, people, and then everyone, as you're coming out of the hospital, they're like, oh, that's the preemie grunt. And you're like,
yes. I'd never really paid attention to it before.
Well, you don't know any of that.
Yeah. And she was loud. She still is.
So is Kidlet,
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Victoria, tell us about AusEd and when did you find them? How did you join?
It's fantastic. AusEd is a wonderful volunteer-run support group. As I mentioned, it was founded in 2004 in Victoria, and it does provide support, information, advocacy for members and their families affected by ED. So we don't have any government funding, but we manage to organise conferences every year, apart from the COVID years, for the whole family to attend.
So you said conference, so like a camp and a conference.
Yeah, I love that word.
That's a great word.
Yeah. So, and I have to say, they're probably my favourite holidays with my family because we get to connect with other ED families. We have so much fun. And we've been a part of the organisation since 2006. So it wasn't long after ectodermal dysplasia was mentioned that, everyone starts Googling and, trying to, and I remember my mother-in-law, she mentioned AusEd, but I think I was just trying to still process everything myself. It maybe took me a couple of months to make that call, and I'm glad I did. I remember calling and I got Natalie Williams in Victoria, and I think for the first hour I just basically cried on the phone. So, but it was just really nice to have that person on the other end of the phone and be able to connect with someone who could say, it's okay, and, everything's going to be fine, sort of thing. So we've made lifelong friends. We look forward to seeing all of the our ED family, I guess, every year. And I know Owen's made connections across Australia. So
best.
Yeah, so because we hold a conference every year in a different state. So we try to move it around so that, different families can make it and, to help with travel costs, those sorts of things.
Yes.
We do provide the camps at a significantly reduced rate for families. So we do a lot of fundraising and other things for that. And I just know that the connections that my son and we've made are amazing. And he could go to any person's house that we know across Australia and be looked after just like we would be.
Makes me want to sob.
The best.
Yeah. And, like if he walked in and said, oh, can you please put the air conditioning on, they'd put it on because they know.
Yes.
Whatever he needs, it would be there for him. So it's amazing.
There's nothing like it.
No.
Seeing someone that's similar to you, a family that's similar to yours, it's magic.
Mm.
And just seeing the faces of everyone. I mean, I know when Owen was a bit younger and because he had his dentures and then his little kids when they don't and they see, a bigger person take their teeth out and show them and you see this, the amazement on their face and they're like, oh, wow, I can have teeth like Owen or, it's so amazing and they become leaders without even knowing it,
So Liz, you said to me off air that you went to one of these, the first initial conference. What was that like as part of your family to go and see other people?
Well, from our point of view, we didn't know much about it. And back then I think I was still in uni, maybe. No, I just finished uni. So I was still sort of in research mode. So I'd started looking up ectodermal dysplasia and trying to figure out all the ins and outs of it. But then to go to the conference and see the kids, it just made sense as soon as we walked in because they looked the same.
Yeah.
They had the same things that they were doing and it just made so much sense for them to all be together and hang out because they understood each other from that point of view.
Yes.
And so I think me and Deb, we actually babysat some of the kids while you guys did the conference side. So we would have them in another room and beautiful. We'd watch TV aunties and play blocks and things like that. So we had like 5 kids in there, I think, at some stage. So we did that for, because they're not a long conference. They're 3 days, I think. And so we did that for a day.
You still need volunteers. You need the power of volunteers to run these things.
And we try to do like some family activities, so we're all together doing things. And then we also try to, like, you know, the kids will do activities that really help improve their self-esteem and you know, get them out there. And I've spoken about Purple Soup. I did a speed pipe, and we have a group that come in called Purple Soup, and they are just fantastic, and they've been to every camp as well, and they do all these adventure therapy type activities.
That's right.
It's just fantastic. We you know, the kids just rave about it every year,
they have such
a good time,
look forward to it.
Yeah.
And so now that Owen is nearly an adult, how does he feel about himself and managing his own care and all of that?
I think the teens are sometimes a little bit hard, you know, like obviously he's been through a lot, and I guess sometimes they don't tell you everything as well. And, you know, I'm sure there's been challenges along the way that, you know, and I think that he's found that he's maybe lost some friends that have been close because, you know, they go off and they do a trade, and because he can't sweat, you know, he can't do that. So, you know, he's sort of going, well, what's my purpose? You know, that sort of thing. And, you know, he's recently started a diploma in nursing. We'll see how that goes, because he is fantastic with people and with little ones. And I'm hoping that he can continue that on. And, but he's just got to find his thing that he enjoys, and you know, and I think he has challenges, and, you know, because he can't just become a fire officer. He can't just go and join the ambulance, you know, the army, or
there's
things that, you know,
he's inside, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of sad, because he goes, I would have really loved to have done that, you know, and then also, you know, we've had hard conversations through, you know, his life, where, you know, because it's like he's been here before, and he'll just come out like 10 years old. He came out with, can I pass this condition on to my kids if I have them? And, you know, and this was a 5-minute trip to the school, you know.
Of course. Of course.
I'm just cleaned up the cocoa pops.
And now, like,
this is the time.
Yeah,
this is when I'm asked that question.
And I'm sitting there going, this is a possibility. And he goes, I'm never having kids. And you go,
But,
you know, I'm sort of going, okay, well, you know, there are options now. There's, you know, research that they're doing, and they've found this protein, and they can give this injection to babies in vitro. And, you know, and he's going, maybe. And then he just jumps out the car and off the
car. You're shattered for a month.
24 hours.
Yeah.
I know that exact feeling.
Hard.
It is hard.
Liz, what about, you talked about your little boy with his ASD diagnosis. When was that bubbling along? And
So I talked about Deb. Deb worked in childcare for 16 years before we decided we were going to have a baby, and she was going to be a stay-at-home mum for that.
Right.
And when he came along, obviously she was stay-at-home mum, and in her childcare career she knew what to look for.
Of course.
So by the time he was one, we were of the opinion that he was more than likely autistic. With the prematurity side of it, we had signed up for a study because I'd received magnesium chloride. There was a study going that they have a child developmental assessment at 2 years old. So we signed up for that, said, yeah, sure, we'll do that. Why not? It's a free assessment. Why would you say no to a free assessment?
Yeah.
So we went for the free assessment in 2020. It's supposed to be when they're expected to be 2. So in April 2020, it was supposed to be. So obviously that got delayed a little bit. so he had it in the July of that year. So it wasn't too much later. And in that assessment, they said that he had global delay, which wasn't unexpected for us. He wasn't talking very much. He didn't respond to his name. He was walking on his toes a lot. He did a lot of bouncing and spinning. He had verbal days versus non-verbal days. I think the amount of words he was talking was about 10, as opposed to, I think you're supposed to be around 50 at that age. Right. And he, in that, they asked us if we had anything that we wanted to raise, and we said we think he might be autistic, and she said, yes, I think you're right. Is that something you want to explore? We said, definitely. If he's autistic, then we need to know what to do and how to help him in the world. So we want that assessment. So he had his assessment over Zoom, I think. And then we had a physical. That was hard. Fun trying to stay in the room, buddy.
Far out.
The camera on the phone. No, you need to stay
he's
in
like,
this
no,
room.
I'm going to go and play with this over here. Yeah.
Yeah, he was all around the house that day.
Of course.
So. You followed him around with the phone.
Basically. Can you get him to play with this? Yeah, sure. just give me an hour.
Can imagine the professionals as well going, this is ridiculous. We cannot do this.
They were lovely. They knew how difficult it was going to be. So after, I think on one of them, he just was not cooperating at all. They said, well, let's just stop. We'll try again another day. So we did that a few times. And then we had a physical assessment in the clinic. So we had about three different sessions with them. And in the one in the clinic, it was really strange because we have to sit there and you're not allowed to talk to them. But you're in the room. So they're asking him to do things and they want to see how he reacts to them while you're there.
So
and so you're not allowed to interact.
Yeah,
and
you
so you're sitting there with your hands on your lap going,
oh, my gosh.
So hard. That's impossible.
It's so hard. It was interesting to go through that. But he received his diagnosis on the 4th of January 2021. So he's autistic level 2, I guess, if everyone wants the specifics. But realistically, he's just kidlet. He expresses his joy in very physical ways. He jumps on a trampoline 24/7 if you'd let him. He spins, he squeals, he wags his tail like wags his bum like a tail. So you know, his whole body gets involved when he's excited about things, and he's a joy in that way. Obviously we have difficulties and we have difficult days and difficult moments, but you know, nobody needs to be advertised on that. So.
No, that's right.
He's a miracle. Boy. He's here.
Exactly.
Yeah, so. We have our prems. It has a totally different spin on everything.
And so does he to preschool or school or childcare? Or?
So he goes to prep at the moment. Yep. So I think that's that preschool in Victoria.
Sort of the first year of school year in Victoria.
Yeah. It's the one before grade one.
Okay.
He goes to that one.
Perfect.
So he changed schools at the beginning of the year, which was a very rough time for all of us. We had a lot of regression in behaviours, but he's done so well now. The new school is so good for him. It's our local school. They are just absolutely fantastic. So they've been really good.
I want to know.
They've also just suggested, and we've moved forward with attempting to get it through NDIS for an AAC device to help him with his communication. So that's been really good. We did just have our review, and they seemed pretty positive about our request. So hopefully that'll go through.
But
I want to know what are like family celebrations like when you're all together, Christmas Day or whenever it is that you all get together. Is there things that you do now as a family to help each other out?
Well, we try to get together once a week, once a fortnight on a Sunday, you know, like do the family dinner. I mean, there's time. We just accommodate, you know. If he's not feeling it or he's not well, you know, there's been times where my sister and Deb have gone home because, you know, of whatever reason. And that's fine. Like, you know, we don't want to push anyone to be where they don't want to be, you know. No. And you know, at Christmas time we've had there's been times where we've got little headphones and we'll put headphones on his ears, you know, if he's feeling uncomfortable or, you know. So I think we just all try to, you know, just accommodate and make sure that that person is feeling okay.
Yeah,
and,
beautiful.
He also has his comfort items at different people's houses. So at Vic's house, there's a Batman castle that she has from when Owen was a kid, like 5 years old.
Yeah.
And she can never get rid of it.
No.
And he really likes the whiteboard now as well.
Yeah,
so he's into the whiteboard.
So. That makes you want to sob because when you know you've got safe houses to go to, it means the world.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think at our parents' house, they've got a dish full of shells that they can never get rid of because that's his toy. And Pop's top drawer, that's where he goes. Pop's top drawer, it's got all the good things in it, like a colouring book and cards and coins. Oh, my God, coins. There's money in here.
Yeah.
He's beautiful. He's amazing. He does speak quite a lot now, but it's his way of talking.
All right.
So is there anything that we've missed that you want to tell the world? Either of you can start.
I just wanted to say, if you do have an organization or a support group that you can be a part of, I know the P Tribe's fantastic, but if there's a condition that you have and you're a part of that support group, I really encourage people to, you know, seek that support and also, you know, find your people because, you know, I mean, for us, you know, having that people, you know, Owen to have those connections, it's just been life-changing. And, you know, so, yeah, I just encourage people to be brave and seek those connections.
If you don't have a diagnosis, then you can reach out to SWAN, Syndromes Without a Name, and you can belong there. Okay, go, Liz.
I'll just second the whole find your people. We were sort of an island on our own, and we didn't have anyone who looked like us around us. And then all of a sudden last year, a family that looked exactly like us moved in around the corner, and our kids are best friends. And we understand each other on a different level.
Of course.
And when it comes to going to a kids' party or seeing other people with their kids, we know what to look for in that scenario because our kids are the same and we see it in the environment. So I'm looking at their kid, they're looking at my kid and we're aware of that environment around them. So I think, and it just takes a really big level of stress down because you've got four eyes instead of two. And it's just, it's really helpful. Just find your people because they understand you.
It can just be one. It doesn't have to be a lot.
No,
it doesn't have to.
And if you haven't found them yet, it doesn't mean you're not going to find
them. That's right. Except we have on last week said they found someone quite late in their journey.
And it's okay to acknowledge that you're lonely and that you haven't found your people, but.
You never know.
Someone might be out there.
Sorry,
I just wanted to mention if people look up the carer adjustment payment on Services Australia website, if you're eligible for it, go for it. It's not advertised anywhere in Centrelink. You can't apply for it through the Centrelink. Sorry, what was that?
What does it mean?
So the carer adjustment payment is available to anyone with a child under 7 who has had a life-changing diagnosis. Autism counts.
Right.
And you are eligible for up to $10,000 per child.
Right.
You just have to tell them how having a child with that diagnosis or disability or traumatic injury has changed your life, how it has affected you financially. And then you can apply for it.
Oh, that's awesome.
It has to be within 2 years of your diagnosis or the injury. So that's the only thing. So we nearly missed it because we only found out about it when our friends around the corner moved in.
Yes.
So We just got in about a month before we would have been overdue, and we recently got the payment about 2 weeks ago.
Oh,
so it takes about 4 months for the process, but
worth
it is well worth it.
Oh, please listen to that.
Yeah.
Like up to 10 grand. So if you have financial hardship and you need
which most peas do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So definitely go for it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sorry, I just want to advertise that because it's not well advertised on the government websites. So.
Well, thank you both so much. It was lovely to speak to you again.
Thank you. Thank you.
We think it was way better, just so you all know.
This one went a lot better, I think.
Yeah, this one was great. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're sorry for making you do it again.
I know.
We're very grateful for you giving us your time.
Be gentle on yourselves today because after sharing, it can be, you know, bring stuff up. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And just thank you for being great peace sisters in our gang and being super supportive of Kate and I. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you for doing what you do as well because I love listening to you guys. It's amazing.
Thank you.
All right. You've opened our eyes. Thank you.
Have the great afternoon.
Started conversations.
Yes. Well, that's what we do.
Yes, that's what
we do. We chat, so we chat.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, thank you both so much. It was lovely to see you again.
You too.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. See you.
We will see you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.